Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go! Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. Today, we are welcomed by Nate Guja. Nate, how are you doing?
Hey, buddy. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. And before we jump into some of the topics that we were talking about prior to this call, it'd be great if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the co-founder of a company called Before You Apply. We're a platform. We're a services company. In short, what we do is we come in, we ask teams that are hiring really tough questions. We package that up in consumable content, and we help those teams distribute it out to reach hard to hire candidates. So we're very much like this combination of like a tech platform with creative services behind it. It's kind of an interesting combination, but it's caught on and it's been fun.
It is catching on. It's definitely caught on, and you are making waves, and you're becoming very well known in the tech community. And I've definitely loved following your content over the past. I think I've been following your content probably now for at least a year.
Yeah. I've been posting. Geez, I started posting on LinkedIn probably like 2.5 years ago. Man, it's just kind of become a thing. It's not what I expected, but it's cool.
It's really cool. So we both work with a lot of startups and growth stage companies. And I think from different points of impact, we have a very similar goal, right? Which is how to help our clients hire, attract top talent in today's market, which is very competitive. And I think to just start us off, I would love to just get a pulse on, you know, what are you seeing out there? What are companies struggling with? Maybe is one way to answer that. Or what are the biggest opportunities right now is another way. I'm just curious to get your thoughts high level on what you're seeing out there in the market.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that I think we kind of share a common audience. This like startup growth stage kind of tech space. And, the thing that we hear you hear is just like hiring is really, really hard. It's always been hard in this space, but it's like really hard right now. And so when our customers come to us, they need a way to show that they're different, or show their unique personality, or like somehow differentiate themselves from all of the other startups that they're competing with. And so that's just the thing. And like, the realities of this space is that we're dealing mostly with scrappy teams. They're small, they're often like under-resourced, and they're like hair on fire, big hiring goals. And they're like, okay, we want to be doing more of this content stuff. We believe in it. We want to like get more branding, more messaging, more information out, but we just like don't know how to do it. Can you help us? And, that's like where we come in. And I know like that's some of the problems that you guys are solving yourselves. And so it's really a unique space for sure, because it's like this combination of like openness to new things and like wanting to evolve, but at the same time being so damn busy. Like, how do you fit it all in?
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Yeah, yeah. I think just getting back to busy, particularly when it comes to some of what I know your team is doing, which is helping guide the strategy and execution of content for hiring teams.
Yeah,
that is definitely something that companies I think need additional help in terms of bandwidth for, because who does that, right? Like even if you have an internal recruiter at an early stage, they're so busy just trying to keep the pipeline strong that maybe they don't feel, based on the outcomes that they're expected to hit, they may not necessarily feel empowered to, okay, let me hit pause for quite a while and work on developing these assets.
It's not realistic. And yeah, I mean, especially like at the earlier stages, which is, you know, something that we've seen as of late is that we're having more early stage companies come to us. And it's usually the recruiter who is coming to us and saying like, hey, like I saw you on LinkedIn, or like I found out about you through our VC or whoever it might be. And like we need help, because this is going to like enable me as the recruiter when I'm reaching out to candidates to have like an asset to share, be able to tell our story better, whatever it might be. And then so you have that, right? You have this busy thing, but then you also have the challenge of coordinating stuff internally, getting founders on interviews, getting engineering teams on interviews, like all this kind of stuff. Like there's a lot of moving parts, and like for that to just fall on a recruiting team is like, it's a really big ask. And so, you know, figuring out like how to do that or leveraging somebody like us, like, you know, that's usually why they come to us. It's just like, okay, can we like just bring you in to like manage the situation and to like to get things done for us quickly. But like, I have so much empathy for recruiting teams. I really do. I mean, they're just like, that's a heavy lift. You know, you have like, unlike sales or unlike marketing, which like recruiting is a combination of both.
Yeah.
Sales has marketing. Yeah. Right. Like, especially now. So you have sales has marketing and marketing has sales, but recruiting doesn't have anybody. And this is where I'm going to get like, you know, opinionated. But I think for even for recruiting teams at companies that have, let's say, an employer brand person or an employer brand team or somebody with the title recruitment marketing, I really don't think that those functions, we can call them, or those roles are doing anything to help recruiters these days. I really don't. I mean, I've talked to enough recruiters and just asked them point blank, like, is employer branding helping you do your job better or easier or faster or have better conversations? And they repeatedly tell me it's not. And so, you know, I think I told you, you know, I mentioned this before we hit record, but like my thoughts on this space have like evolved quite a bit about this. Where does marketing your company to candidates and recruiting, like where does that line up? Where does that align? And I think like in for the longest time, there's been this conversation of employer branding going on. And then there's been this reality of recruiting. And it seems to me like those conversations have been going in opposite directions. And I think that what employer branding has done as an industry has been not serving the people that they claim to be serving, which is recruiters. And so recruiters are just like tasked with like, shit, we got to figure this out ourselves.
So what does the disconnect look like? What are the biggest things that you're seeing right now that maybe people feel like is impactful, but actually is not, it's not actually driving hiring outcomes or even really awareness? Or I mean, like what are you seeing right now that's broken?
Okay. So I think employer branding gets really stuck in strategy mode. Because I've actually been part of those projects, you know, before you apply. I was part of an agency, and we actually like we built our company inside of the agency, and that agency started off as a content studio in San Francisco, creating content for recruiting teams, and then it expanded its services into like employer branding services. So like I've been part of these like big, you know, employer value proposition projects and things like that. And like, they're very intensive from a time bandwidth standpoint. They're very expensive. And they take a very long time to not get to like, in my opinion, things that like really matter to candidates. I think what you end up with in employer branding in general is you end up with companies talking so much about themselves and like talking to themselves. It runs through like layers of PR and approval, and the number of times that I've seen companies get caught up in like, what words are we going to be putting on our career site? Or founders at like prominent tech companies going like, oh, these are the results of like the internal like discovery work that we've done. No, I don't believe that. That's not right. You know, like just things getting blocked over and over again. Meantime, months and months and months and tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars are being wasted on this stuff. And the recruiting team is still sitting there going like, my job is still just as hard or harder than it was before. I'm trying to talk to engineers. Like, what the hell is going on here? You know? And so that's where I see it. Like, and so, go ahead. Did you want to answer me?
But yeah, no, I was just saying, I think like the, from what we're seeing there, for whatever reason, and it just seems so obvious, but I guess it really is not. You have to know the customer, you have to know the buyer.
It does seem so obvious, doesn't it?
So it's like, so for us, I think why we have a really high offer acceptance rate for hiring recruiters for Secure Vision, which right now a lot of people are saying hiring recruiters is the hardest role to hire for in this market.
Yeah.
And yet we have a ridiculously high offer acceptance rate. I think it's around 95% for wow, hiring recruiters. And we've actually had several quarters where it was at 100%. And we've probably hired, I don't know, close to 20 something recruiters over the past several months. So it really just comes down to, we understand them. You know, we get them at a very deep fundamental level in terms of, you know, what they care about, what they're, you know, of course, everybody has different values, but you know, within the segment of the largest segment of recruiters, we know ourselves, we know our culture, and we know that speaks to a fair amount of that recruiter community. And we're able to, everything from the messaging on our careers page to the content we develop is with them in mind. Like, I almost consider the careers page as, this is our proposal, right? Just like you have like sales proposals, right? Like, this is our proposal to talent considering us, but it's like a core part of our culture too. And it really is what we believe in, because when people interview with us, it's a very consistent message. Everything that they picked up on in terms of the content that we create for them is aligned with what they experienced in the interview process, is then aligned with what it's actually like to work here, mm-hmm, and then is aligned with the feedback that's posted on Glassdoor. And that's why I think it works. It's not just about like giving lip service and saying, this is what people want to hear. First off, you have to know what people really want.
You
have to know what your culture is. Those things have to match up. And then it's just about, from at that point forward, making sure that like at each part of the journey, candidate, employee, everything is consistent, and that it's a consistent experience that you're actually delivering on, which delivering on is the hardest part. It can be, right? Because it can require structural change to how your company's organized and how you manage and lead and how you train and develop people and really pushing for that culture that you want. But yeah, I'd say that's probably, from my perspective, with the employer branding and just general messaging and the story that you're telling, does it really resonate with the audience, and can you really deliver on it?
Yeah. Yeah. The delivery part, you're right, is like, I mean, geez, that's like a whole other conversation. And I mean, I guess for, you know, some helpful context too, is like the things that I talk about or think about the most is top of the funnel. Mm-hmm. And I think like there's like a whole other thing, like after a candidate is engaged and in a process and things like that. And I think, gosh, man, especially like in tech, that's where tech has a really, really like big challenge. I had this guy put a comment on my post the other day, and it was so insightful. He said, you know, a big challenge with tech is, how do you move fast? You know, like the whole thing, like move fast and break stuff, but like, how do you move really fast and at the same time be very intentional about the culture you're building? And it's extremely difficult. Yeah, I know. I don't have a good answer to that, but it sure as hell made me think. And because I think that's the dilemma that a lot of tech companies are in, you know, because it's like, we got to move really fast. Things change consistently. You're taking on multiple rounds of funding. More funding that comes in, the more you have to hire, the faster you go, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's just like that's the model. And at the same time, you know, like I'll never forget this. The first time I heard this was we were working with this big gaming company, and they were still young, but but they had grown so much. You know, these companies, right? It's like they're 3 years old and they have like 1,000 employees, but they're still a startup. And so they said that they had grown so fast that employees, a lot of employees looked up at one point and were just like, who are we now? Like, we're not the same company anymore that we were when we were like 20 or 50 people. I don't know a lot of the people now at this company, but we're still so young that we're a startup. It's like this like weird identity crisis that a lot of high growth tech companies go through. And I don't know, man, it's like, it's just super challenging. I don't know how to like solve that problem, but it's something I think about.
Yeah. It's one of the earlier episodes we had was with Steve Cadigan, and he was the first chief HR officer of LinkedIn.
Oh, okay.
So he oversaw people and talent as LinkedIn scaled from, I think, around 300-400 people to a few thousand.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he had some really interesting insights. And of course, it was like, you know, very high level, like big picture stuff. But basically what he was talking through was the importance of really just make it, having like what a people first culture means to him, which was that on leadership meetings, the first thing that was discussed is how do we build world-class teams and make sure we can continue to do that. And he basically just said that the culture was, if there were other problems, other things that were broken, but they didn't solve for that first challenge first, they just want to get to the other stuff. Like the whole, every leadership like meeting was the first question they asked was, how are we doing building world-class teams? Like they made it a priority across, it was across like the entire executive leadership team. So I think it just comes down to, it's like at the highest level, it's like, it's a culture of the organization. It's the value and importance that they put on people. And, yeah. And do they really believe that the people are driving the value, whether as a product or a services company, that people are obviously driving the value behind a product. So, you know, how high on the priority level is that? Are they optimized toward that? Or do they see them as themselves as like a product led or an engineering led organization? And maybe the emphasis is on more so like features or whatever yeah. else, product roadmap versus just like, hey, how do we just make sure we have the smartest, like most capable, most excited, best fit individuals working to help us solve these problems and build amazing products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it's making me think that, especially, you know, for startups, it's like the one thing that's guaranteed is that things are going to change. Like, it is something is going to change, whether that means product or your market or a combination of those things or price, like things are going to change. But if you can keep that, the stuff internal consistent, people are super cool to change that. It's when things internally are chaotic and toxic or unpleasant or whatever it might be. And then you're at the same time dealing with like all of this growth and stress and change on top of it. That's when things get super messy. But like when things internally, like you're saying, like you have this, like this thing that you're always pointing towards and like, okay, no matter what, like we acknowledge the fact that like a bunch of stuff outside of this is going to move. But inside, we're like super focused on this because we know that if we can keep this stable, the other stuff is manageable.
Right. And I think about like what I think about LinkedIn too, right? With Steve Cadigan's example is like, you know, they're one of the most successful product software companies in the world.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just, I mean, obviously his role was HR people focused, but what he was saying is that, no, this wasn't just in internal HR discussions. Like this was how the entire executive team viewed the business.
Right.
Throughout that entire phase of growth. And I thought that was just really impactful. Okay. This is obviously a fantastic product, right? That has so many advantages and is doing so well, but it all from their perspective, it all came back to or down to the team, like people that are building the product and that are doing revenue, product engineering, and all the other important functions. The focus was on building that world-class organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really cool stuff.
So, I mean, like, you know, back to like what can recruiting teams do?
Yeah, I guess so. That's where we started, right? It's like, so we kind of identified like there's this disconnect, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to employer branding and I guess that kind of goes off into a separate space, I guess. So I guess the recruiting teams that are getting it right, just kind of like circling back to on a more tactical level, like what are you seeing talent acquisition departments that are winning right now? What are they doing? What are they putting on an emphasis on currently?
Yeah. So I think, if I just like even move like beyond recruiting and just say like companies that are doing a good job of this, I think like what it comes down to is like, if you just look at behavior, and this is like why my thoughts on this stuff are continually evolving. It's because I think our behavior is evolving as consumers of things, whatever that might be, whether it's information or products or jobs, whatever. And so I look at like now where we spend most of our time. I think we spend most of our time like in some kind of a feed, you know. This is like, I really like, I thought about it one day and I was like, okay, if we as people, like if depending on like we have our personal stuff that we do and we're engaged in that, and then we are engaged in our work, but what do we do outside of those things? It's like, it's usually pick up your phone and like go into some app, right? And then depending on your interests, maybe it's not exactly that, but it's probably something similar to it. Like I know like Jackson, my co-founder, he always has like Hacker News up in a tab because multiple times a day he checks out Hacker News to see like what's going on there. For some people it might be Reddit, for example, it might be something else, but it's usually like in this structure, right? Of like feed and information. And I'm like, that's what it is now. Like that's it, you know? Like if we want to get the attention and become relatable and have a level of like, I guess, personality or connection, we need to be showing up there. Mm. And then, so I thought about this in terms of like hiring, and I just think that the industry of marketing jobs to candidates has been so stuck in like this strategy mode of like, yeah, trying to make things appear to be a certain way, be positioned a certain way, have the right words, be like way too branded. And that's like in opposition to the way that we behave as consumers when we're discovering stuff. So if we're going to discover stuff in, let's say, a feed format, then that's where recruiting teams, and that's where teams in general need to be. And to me, what that looks like, my thoughts on this have evolved too. Before I was just like, I was firm. I'm like, okay, if you're going to show up in the feed, you need to be like dropping knowledge on your industry. You need to be like a subject matter expert. And then I changed my tune on that. Like, because not everybody is that. And what I think is really most important is showing the personality of your company. And I came up with this term on this call I was on, and I called it personality at scale. And I was just like, that's what it is now. It's like personality at scale. How can your company show their personality in a feed which provides scale? And go ahead.
I was just going to piggyback on what you said too. Like it's a lot of what I'm seeing, particularly in the recruiting space, is a lot of the content that is, you know, I think values, and you know, obviously it's self-evident. It becomes the most valuable content is getting the most engagement. People are saying yes to this. They want more of it. And it's so the most valuable content from that perspective of getting like the best engagement, the most followers, seems to not necessarily be focused on being a subject matter expert, but seems to be more focused on being relatable.
It's relatable. That's what it is.
Okay.
Cause that's my perspective. I agree. Yeah. No. I think you're dead on. And this is like where, again, like I've changed my stance on it. Because, you know, as a recruiter, I see like the kind of thing right now that we're talking about, this like content and distribution and meeting people where they are, and this whole thing as like recruiter enablement. That's what it is. You know, it's like this isn't about like flipping some switch and suddenly like driving qualified inbound software engineers to your careers. Like, come on now. Like, that's just not the way it works. But what this is about doing things consistently, not just as a recruiting team, but like as an organization. And like, again, let's face it. I mean, if you have a 100-person company and you have 10 people doing this, that's a lot of people amplified on social media. I mean, who are doing it at like with any level of consistency. I mean, you know, like you spend as much time in LinkedIn as I do. And like the LinkedIn algorithm, I'm seeing posts from a week ago.
I really like that trend, by the way, where it's surfacing content. It's good to see. And that's the way it should be ultimately, in my opinion. I think it's a lot better this way.
Yeah. And so like the ability to stay alive and like, and out there and stuff. I mean, it only takes a little to be perceived as a lot. And so I think about this like in terms of like enablement, like what is going to enable your recruiters to make it like easier to have conversations with the right people? Or when they do reach out to somebody, it triggers that thing like, oh, I recognize them or that brand or their people or whatever it is. And like, they're relatable and they're approachable and they're normal people and they're friendly and likable, all these like different adjectives that we can throw on top of it. Bottom line is like, cool, I'd be down to talk to them.
I want to tell you a little bit about what we're working on at Secure Vision.
Okay.
A core objective I have for our delivery team. So again, like our delivery team is comprised of around 30-ish recruiters right now that work on, you know, it could be product engineering, revenue, G&A, really anything in between for startups and growth stage organizations. One of the core metrics I'm actually looking at right now, and of course, like in addition to offer acceptance rate, is I'm actually honing in and focusing on time to coverage, like time it takes to get to full coverage, which we define as 4 candidates actively in process being considered.
Oh, wow.
So we're not even like necessarily looking at time to fill, because our thought process is like, if we can accelerate the work in that first few weeks, then ultimately that's going to set us up for success to have a competitive time to fill. So I'm really like honing in on that first, what is that first, you know, 2 to 4 weeks look like?
Is anybody else measuring like that?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I've never even heard of that before. It sounds like very intuitive. It's cool.
Yeah. I think it's going to be good for us. So what we've noticed is that like we want to try to figure out from a delivery perspective, how can we cut down on the time it takes to get to full coverage, which we've defined as 4 candidates in process. We used to define it as 3 candidates in process.
Okay.
The issue with that though, is that if 2 candidates get cut out, then you're down to 1. And then you're basically restarting your entire pipeline. So we actually adjusted and now we're considering it 4 people in process. And at a minimum standard, we're saying that 4 candidates have to be in process by the time you're 1 month into a search. Now, this taken in consideration, it might take 6 candidates introduced, right? 6 candidates were introduced, 2 were passed on. The net result has to be 4 or more candidates that are screened, qualified, real potential candidates that could receive an offer, right? Mm-hmm. So they're mid to down funnel candidates, basically. So they have to have been brought in. They have to be at the hiring manager stage of the interview process at a minimum. So what we're looking at then is like, okay, how do we go about cutting down on time to coverage? Like, what's the most effective way to do that? Well, one, there's always activity, but that's like, come on, like everybody gets that. And the issue with that too, it's like, it's so situational, right? So searches are going to look so different. We do have like some core, company-wide kind of activity metrics. We're not an activity-driven company. We're a quality and outcome-driven company, but we do still have some guidelines of this is probably what outreach should look like over your first couple of weeks, right?
Got it.
So we have that kind of stuff. But then we started thinking about how do we get a little bit more sophisticated than most other companies out there, whether it's in-house or agency side. And we really started thinking about what if we stepped back and we were like, what are the top 10 positions that we fill for our clients? And in-house companies could do this too. Like, what are the top 5 scale positions we fill consistently? what are we doing in terms of proactively creating and nurturing candidate pools for each of those positions to develop awareness and value within those communities so that when we need to tap into those communities and we do our outreach, we can increase our response rate and acceptance rate so that we can then accelerate coverage so that we can cut down on our time to coverage.
Got it.
So that's kind of where it's led us to now. And so now we're going through the motion of like, let's create all these different basically candidate pools. And then how can we market to those groups specifically to build those relationships proactively? So I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on that. If that's something, you know, do you ever like when it comes to, you know, I don't even know if it's really employer branding, but when it comes to your approach to outreach, like getting segmented into specific communities that you're going to be hiring for at scale and reaching out to them proactively.
Yes. Are these just like just a couple questions? Are these pools, when you say reach out to them, is it like you have email addresses and you can send them information via email? Is it?
I think that could be part of it, but we don't want it to be salesy or like just intrusive. We want it to be feel really natural. So we're thinking about potentially like throwing, maybe even having some like virtual events could be an option. I think email outreach definitely could be a channel. Maybe even like in-mail outreach, but if we could do so in such a way that like, I don't mind doing outbound and reaching out to people. Like I'm not totally opposed to it, but I just want to do it in a tasteful way that adds value at least.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we
content for them? Yeah. Yeah. I would do, I love the idea of like niching down like as much as you possibly can. Right. And then doing things that are just like, this is going to sound like an obvious thing, right? But the funny thing is like, it's obvious, but in practice, you kind of see the opposite, right? So like what you see in like, I've like joked about this in the past, like talent pipeline is really just code word for like email list that I'm going to like blast whenever I have a job open. It's like, that's not a,
right.
You know, that's not like a nurture campaign. That's not like any of these like words that get thrown on top of the realities. And so if you want to create, because like for you, you know that if you can like create enough value that this audience can like consistently take things away, like valuable things away, that they will like automatically connect the value with you. Like you don't have to like tell them anything, you know, like people are smart. Like they will go like, oh, I learned about this through this, or I was introduced to this person through this person, whatever, you know, like they'll connect those dots. And so I'm a big believer in this like fireside chat, idea. This like real like intimate kind of like conversation thing where like, let's say you have, you know, you have a group of engineers, for example. Like I'm not an engineer, so forgive me, but, and you can bring on somebody kind of well-known, let's say like a head of eng at insert fancy tech company or something, you know, somebody who's got some status. And like maybe bring another person in who's got the, you know, or somebody to like kind of moderate a conversation. And like they talk about like a current trend going on in like this aspect of engineering or in product or how they think about like designing engineering teams or whatever it is. I mean, you could probably come up with like 50 different conversation topics. And you just like, you kind of like host these like little like VIP events and you go out to that community, but you don't make it accessible to everybody. You make it like, hey, you know, we're going to cap this at like 25 people or something because we want it to be intimate. We want it to be a Q&A. We want it to be like very personal. And so, you know, first 25 people who register can get in, whatever, you know, like you kind of just like make it special. Yeah. You can market that kind of thing across the board. And then, I mean, I always think about post-production content and things like that. I mean, like everything you do, you know, can be like chopped up and distributed out and like, and it could be put into like a newsletter for that community and you could like transcribe it and it could be, I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do just like off of that kind of motion, you know, but I just think about that. Like, I think about the how do you make something like, I guess like special. And it seems to me like to a candidate audience, there's a lot of like that to everybody, you know, like there's a lot of like, oh, I'm going to like, just, you know, to everything. And there isn't enough of like this like curated experience.
I agree. I personally prefer those highly curated. I was actually just talking about this with Nick on actually on the other side of the spectrum, our demand gen strategy for a new business. And we were just talking about marketing and sales and everything tied to acquiring more customers. And we talked about how, from an event perspective, that highly curated smaller group is such a, from my perspective, so much more valuable, because you get through that initial like conversation. Everybody knows how to introduce themselves. They go through this pitch essentially, like, oh, I do this, that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of circle around the room, and then you do a few more circles, and then you have deeper conversations with people. Sure. And you get through, you know, and you're within that room with them for like a little bit longer period of time. So, you know, we've, you know, I've definitely seen more value opposed to that kind of blast approach, where it's just like, let's just get in front of as many people as possible. It's like, totally. How can we create these actually meaningful relationships that's a little bit more real and deeper. And then that's really, I think, where value's created in so many different ways.
It is, you know, yeah. And then like, you know, it gives you all like, I mean, I think the goal, probably, if I know you and like probably the conversations you guys are having, is like, well, how do we become more of like a media company too? Right. Like how do we produce stuff that draws people to us and become known as like the people with the ideas or, you know, you start doing stuff like this now that you're thinking about to these like segmented markets, all of that can be turned into like these little media properties.
Yeah.
You know,
quick question. I one of the things that we're looking at, I think I probably look at this once a year and then I usually hold off. But now I'm looking at it again, is LinkedIn sponsored company pages.
Yeah.
You can create, I don't know if you've talked to LinkedIn about that, but basically you have a couple extra tabs and you can put like video content up on there, and you can put, just a fair amount of just different content about who you are and what the positions, what it's like to work there. And you can, you can start to put that. They don't provide, I don't think, like strategic guidance necessarily, but it's like, you can create, you know, based off a template, put this data in. And one of the value adds that I think LinkedIn is doing with it is that they're driving impressions to the company page. Now, like it shows up. So the company page essentially shows up as essentially like an ad in the corner of somebody's LinkedIn screen. So then you like click on it and you get like a certain amount of like, I think it's like 19,000 impressions per month. I don't know, something like that. So I'm wondering if that's a good way to drive awareness. I mean, I was thinking about getting that and then basically creating a separate kind of page within the company page, like for product, engineering, sales, marketing, G&A, and then basically having that specialized content for each of those segments to just drive kind of awareness. Again, it's a little bit looser. It's not like it's, you know, the idea I was sharing with you earlier was it's like there's a set list of candidates that we're intentionally like nurturing, that we kind of know who they are, versus this is like just anybody on LinkedIn, kind of random people that kind of fit certain criteria will get these little ad boxes. They'll go to the company page, they'll get a feel for who we are. We may not have something now, but it drives awareness and brand possibly.
Yeah. So the stuff that you're doing could go there, right? The stuff that you're...
It could. Yeah, it could. I mean, it's just, I think the LinkedIn approach is a little different. The approach I was talking to earlier with the candidate pools, it would require like manually somebody adding candidates to the pool that they've like viewed and that they've noticed, like, this is somebody that we'd love to work with at some point.
Yes, for sure.
Versus LinkedIn, it's kind of like more of that blast kind of what we were just kind of talking about. We don't know who's going to end up viewing the page. There's like certain criteria I think we can put in to target it a little bit. But as you know, there's a big difference from what an algorithm could tell on somebody's profile than a real recruiter that's kind of looking at all the pieces and putting them together at this point in time.
You know,
can you do a better job at that?
Yeah. So it's funny you bring this up because I haven't been paying enough attention to company pages until recently. I kind of moved away from it. And then I've been seeing there's been a few companies that I've become really, really, I don't know, intrigued with. So I've followed their company page just to kind of see like what's up, you know, and I've seen their company pages showing up in my LinkedIn feed with some like really creative stuff. And I've been looking at their engagement, and their engagement is really good.
It's getting better. I don't know what's, I mean, maybe people are producing better quality content, or maybe LinkedIn's algorithm is being a little bit more favorable toward company pages because maybe they're trying to drive sales of their sponsored page. I don't know.
It's probably all of that. But I've noticed that these, you know, these company pages have had personality, and then you see members of their team, you know, in the comments and stuff. And it just like, it kind of clicked. And I actually, like last night, I saw this one. I was like, man, I gotta be doing more stuff like this too with my company. So I think it's a good idea, because I think LinkedIn has finally come around to the fact that like company pages do matter.
Right. Yeah, they do. It's just, you know, they did the sponsored company. They've had it for quite a while, but it never really, I think it's starting to get better. And I think the newest iteration is intriguing. And it's the first one that it's after like a 20-minute demo, I'm kind of thinking to myself, okay, yeah, this might be worth the investment, but it's a big investment because it's not only the cost that it has to have the sponsored page.
Yeah.
Then it requires a ton of content development, and it's obviously it's got to be very good stuff. And it requires really somebody owning it and the salary of that person, right?
So there's
a huge kind of, it's a huge push. And then they don't really have a ton of data yet on what it really does. I mean, like they didn't really understand, like when I was asking the reps about like conversions and what that looks like, but it does kind of align with the overall philosophy of, hey, let's produce valuable content and let's have it go in front of relevant people that care about that. And that's going to have a return. Maybe it's not always the most immediate ROI, but it just, the logic seems like sound enough, right? I mean, it's consistent with our philosophy on,
Totally. And especially if you're basically like repurposing or republishing content that you're creating for another group of people, like why not, That's the thing. It's like, cause I think what you're talking about with this like segmented, more like personalized approach with these different pools of candidates and audience that you have is super smart. And if that stuff there can just be repurposed and like more like categorized, organized, whatever on LinkedIn page, that's
We're going to try it for us. And then if depending on how it does works for us, we'll start to roll it out into our playbooks for our clients. We usually use ourselves as test things on ourselves. If it works, we tell our clients.
I know.
But Nate, we're coming up on time. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too, man.
So thank you. And before we jump off, could you please tell everybody where they can follow you, where they can find your content?
Yeah, sure. So I'm active on LinkedIn. Nate, GUGGIA. I also have a newsletter. That is essentially, it's the same things I post on LinkedIn. It just goes to your email address. It's nateislearning.com. You can go there and check it out and subscribe if you want.
Great. Well, Nate, thank you very much. This has been a blast. And for everybody tuning in, thank you. And we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.